Good afternoon and welcome to today's Public Safety Subcommittee meeting. With me here today is Senator Dyson, Senator French, and myself, Senator Olson. We're being teleconference and recorded, so please turn off your cell phones and Blackberries. This meeting is on the VPSOs and the Alaska State Troopers. For those of you who will be testifying, please remember to identify yourself and your affiliation before you begin your testimony. We have an hour and a half for the meeting. With that, Commissioner, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Masters, Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. To my right is Jeff Hoover, Admin Services Director for DPS. And to my left is Captain Steve Arlo. He's the commander for the VPSO program. We've prepared a PowerPoint presentation to guide us through the presentation this afternoon, and we're fine with questions any time during the presentation.
Okay.
Just as a real quick introduction on the VPSO program, this program's been around within DPS for over 30 years as a means to meet our mission in primarily in rural areas of the state and providing law enforcement and public safety services to rural Alaska and some of the smallest villages in rural Alaska.
Mr. Commissioner, just hang on just a second. I just want to welcome Senator Coghill to the subcommittee.
Thank you, Chairman.
Go ahead.
As I'd testified in previous hearings, the VPSO program and delivering these services through the VPSO program to rural Alaska is one of the top priorities of DPS, and certainly as you look at previous years, the commitment to this program is very high within DPS. And just to outline just very briefly some of the importance or the important aspects of it, in 2005 UAA Justice Center did a study regarding sexual assault and DV cases in Alaska that were investigated by the state troopers, and some interesting data that came out of that. One was that in villages that had a VPSO, the incidence for serious physical injury due to assault was nearly reduced by 40% than those that did not. Also that the investigation of sexual assault cases by the Alaska State Troopers, the rate at which those cases were accepted for prosecution were 3.5 times greater in villages that had VPSOs when the VPSO was involved in the initial response and if the case was reported to the VPSO initially. Those are very significant findings out of that we didn't necessarily expect to see that, but it certainly highlights the importance of having a VPSO position in some of the most remote communities in the state. Something a little bit more recent that we've been getting some initial information on, and that is whether or not having a VPSO has effects in other areas besides just the law enforcement piece. And one of those areas that we're getting some information back is that having a VPSO in a community also appears to reduce the rate of suicide in communities as well. This chart you have in front of you is a list of the VPSO program's grantees. Most of those are regional nonprofit corporations, with the exception of the Northwest Arctic Borough, which is a municipality.
Senator Dyson, you go back with
Are there other communities or areas that have a mechanism by which they could fund their own VPSO?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, in order for a VPSO to be placed in a community, the community has to qualify. So there's a set of criteria by which we define what communities are eligible. Pretty much almost all rural communities are eligible. The request for a VPSO would go to the regional nonprofit corporation for that area. Most areas of the state are covered by one of these regional nonprofit corporations. There are some areas in the state that are not covered by one of our grantees. For example, the North Slope Borough is one. However, the North Slope Borough also provides its own police services by exercising borough-wide police powers. But for the most part, most of the areas that we would place a VPSO are covered by these.
All up, Senator Dyson.
Yeah. you didn't answer my question, and I think it's a difficult question, but we can talk offline. What I'm wanting to know are there other communities or nonprofits that could finance their own BPSOs, and they're not? In other words, yeah.
Through the chair, I believe the answer to that is yes. There may be communities in areas that are not grantees. There's nothing in the regulations or the statutes, that, as I understand them, that would preclude another entity.
Just a comment. We have the same issues with communities that could afford to have their own regular police force and don't, you know, require on troopers. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Commissioner, continue, please.
Thank you. Currently under the FY13 budget, we have capacity to reach 116 positions. Currently, as of today, 92 of those positions are filled in 80 communities. VPSOs are located in 13 boroughs throughout the state. And of the communities that we've identified with populations of over 50, there are actually 80 communities that today do not have any form of law enforcement contained within them. This here slide gives a visual depiction of each of the grantees and the level of their grant awards for the contracts, the largest of which you see is AVCP, the smallest is Chugach-Mute. And this slide shows the number of positions that we've allocated to each of the nonprofits or awardees. And what we've done here is shown the total number of positions that are authorized and then the number filled. So, for example, AVCP, the total number that they're allowed under their contract with us today is 31, of which they have 29 filled. And we've done that for each of the grantees.
Commissioners, you look at the Northwest Arctic Borough, I see there's five authorized positions, but you've got six slots filled. What does that mean?
What's happened there is the Northwest Arctic Borough initially was given a grant, and we're in the process of updating their grant, and they have one additional position. So what we'll do is amend that grant. We can amend these grants throughout the year.
Okay. So it's not like somebody's out there not getting paid.
Correct. And it also means, the main point here as well is, even though we may have a nonprofit or a grantee with a specified number, if there are certainly a lot more communities that may be ready for a VPSO out there, and as those grantees are able to bring those communities on board, we have the capacity to be able to make changes.
Thank you.
This here slide depicts the historical VPSO budget looking back to fiscal year 2008. The blue is the total VPSO budget. The red bar is the amount of the budget which is given out to the nonprofits or the grantees in the grant awards. The
Senator Dyson.
Maybe I wasn't paying attention. So is the state paying all of the light blue or light purple one? Or is it just added on to what the top of the nonprofits?
Yes, through the chair, the blue shows the entire operating budget component, and the red next to it shows just the portion of that component that is going out in the grant.
All right,
board.
Thank you.
Continue, please.
This next slide gives a pictorial history going back to 1993 on the VPSO hires and turnovers for each of the fiscal years that are depicted. And there's a couple of things I'd like to point out on this slide. One is right about in the middle of the slide, there was several years, 2003, 2004, 2005, where there was a very high turnover, where as a matter of fact, the red bar is way in excess of the blue bar, which is the hires that we want to show. So the trend, certainly since then, has been reversing that picture, where we're hiring much more than we're losing. The other thing I wanted to point out, just to be aware of, is this depiction is shown in percentages, and not necessarily in raw numbers. So you also have to look at, as you go towards the current fiscal year, that certainly since 2008, where we had 45 VPSOs, to presently where we have 92, that the numbers, percentage-wise, really are much more dramatic in the sense that we're addressing the turnover issue, although certainly we do have a long way to go.
Senator French.
Just remind me, what year we made the adjustments as a result of the VPSO task force, what year did that occur? If you know off the top of your head, I can't remember, but I was there, but I just can't remember. Yeah.
Through the chair, I believe we started the first increments for the change in fiscal year 09.
Thank you.
What I wanted to do with these next couple of slides is talk about some of the efforts that we've been doing within the program. And what I would like to do is I'm going to have Captain Arlo talk about these. But in essence, I believe what you'll see over the next couple of slides is that there is a definite aversion by our department to keep status quo within the VPSO program. We're looking for innovative ways to recruit. We're looking for innovative ways to administer the program and looking at changes within the program so that we can capitalize on these improvements for the benefit of the program to make this program stronger. So I'll have Captain Arlo continue from here. If that's
thank right. you, Commissioner. My name is
Captain. Identify yourself for the record, please, and go ahead with your presentation.
My name is Captain Steve Arlo with the Alaska State Troopers, and I'm the commander for the VPSO program. And I've held this position for the last 7 years. And I'm very familiar with the program and the workings behind it and the reasons for it. The first thing I'll reference this slide is the recruitment efforts that we have done over the last few years. And as you can see, we're out there in the public showing appearances at places like AFN, the State Fair, any kind of job corps, job fair events, even if they're in rural, like Emonic or any of those rural hubs that have fairs, we'll show up to those. We have a particular platform display that we use to represent the program, and we ask and offer opportunities for the folks interested to ask questions. And we also get into presentations. Both the VPSOs and the troopers in rural attend school events and high school events and present about the VPSO program and opportunities in there. Just in 2012 alone, we went to 11 different events promoting the program. As you can see in front of you, you were handed a kind of a professional brochure. We have four current brochures out that represent the program. One is a brochure that is for the public or the community, so to speak. If they were interested in having a VPSO, that's kind of a Q&A for them to know a little bit about the program. And we have another brochure for those interested in becoming VPSOs that explains the relationship between the 10 nonprofit or the 9 nonprofits in the one borough, how to contact them and pursue the interest in being a VPSO. Within the DPS website, we have a direct link to the VPSO program that provides the same information, and it also includes a professional done video. It's about a 19-minute video that was done a few years ago, and it basically follows a new VPSO to the academy, life at the academy, and then graduation, and then into the field. And it's, as I call it, we don't sugarcoat it. We let them see what it would really be like to be a VPSO and the challenges they'll face. So we're pretty proud of that. If you want to go to the website there, you can see that video. We also have some other avenues that we're doing, outreach and progressive thinking regarding the Alaska Youth Academies around the state. These are week-long academies that we have conducted over the last 2 years, two summers. This summer will be our third. We have started in Barrow and Bethel, where we invite kids from the villages to come to those hubs. And we spend a week introducing them to career opportunities in public safety, not necessarily just VPSOs, but anything from, we bring the U.S. Marshals in, we bring any local police departments, VPSOs, troopers. We like to select VPSOs and troopers that reflect the region, and we also explore things like district attorney opportunities and other things related to public safety. And we're expanding that this summer to also in Bethel, Barrow, Fairbanks, Hooper Bay, and Emonic. So we'll have those camps going on this summer. They've been a real success. The other program that we have as an outreach is called the Law Enforcement Cadet Corps, which is stationed in Sitka. That's where the commissioner has somebody dedicated in Sitka that oversees Mount Edgecombe. It's an opportunity for those interested in careers in public safety to sign up to be a cadet one night a week. They'll be invited to come to the Sitka Academy and have some time with troopers and learn a little bit about being in law enforcement. And I think one weekend a month, they'll do some overnight trip. And then on the summer, they'll have a week-long summer camp where they'll do some kind of event as well. We're expanding that program not only to Sitka, but also to Galena, which is a similar type hub, much like Edgecombe, where village kids from around surrounding villages come into Galena. So we've just started that last year, and so that's kind of been a success as well.
Before you go on, this is Joe Masters again. Just to talk a little bit about this, this is a joint effort between the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Education, and the Department of Labor. Senator Bishop, when he was commissioner at Labor, and I approached Edgecombe in leadership at the Department of Education on this concept of starting what is essentially a junior ROTC program at Mount Edgecombe. It's been a fantastic program, although I do want to point out that because of the age that we can hire VPSOs and law enforcement officers in the state, for us to see fruits out of this program, we've got a couple of more years to be able to do that. But so far, it's been a fantastic program. It gives kids a very good insight not only into the law enforcement and justice professions, but also gives them insight into some of the expectations of employers and how to make some very good life choices that impact them. Sorry.
Thank you.
Senator Branch has a question.
A couple questions on this, if I could, Mr. Chairman. You, an earlier slide pointed out that you're about 24 positions short of where you want to be. That's about a 25% rate, roughly, on where you are. That's a big gap to fill up. But these look like innovative ideas, and I see the next slide is also about innovations. Have you looked at nonprofits that have more trouble than others in filling their slots or have higher turnover than other regions? And if so, which ones are the good ones and which ones are not so good?
I'd rephrase that. Which ones are good and which ones are better?
Through the chair, Senator French, I think definitely we can identify those regions that are, I guess, for example, the YK Delta. It's a large population of people, several villages. You could imagine that keeping VPSOs and the turnover rate there is much higher than an area like Southeast Alaska. There's a lot more. And I lived here for 10 years. As the village communities here, a lot more opportunities and things for people to do here, whereas in the YK Delta, less opportunities. So we don't have a problem filling our positions here in Southeast. The Tan and our chief's region has a pretty good consistent record of keeping people filled and not a large turnover rate. But the area like in Kotzebue, we've gone through some challenging times here trying to keep people to come to the program and then keeping them in the program, much like the YK Delta.
And that's just, if I could, it seems almost counterintuitive that a place like the YK Delta, where there's less opportunity, you wouldn't be able to find more folks willing to step forward and take a paying cash job.
Through the chair, Senator French, I agree, but also it's a much tougher job as a VPSO in that YK Delta region because of the fact that the issues that they're dealing with, and a lot of those VPSOs are born and raised in the region, and they're having to deal with their family members, and it's very stressful, and it can be difficult.
Okay. And another one more question.
Senator French, continue.
A slightly separate idea, and that is I think of the justice, the kids enrolled in justice classes, both at UAA and UAF, as being, you know, maybe folks you could tap. I don't know whether you're working at the universities or working in the classrooms or sort of calling through those enrollees, but I would think, you know, any Alaskan Native who is enrolled in a justice class anywhere in the university system would sort of be a little blinking light as a potential person who might want to step out and take a job like this if you thought about recruiting there.
Through the chair, Senator French, we actually have done presentations at UAA, and for those specific students interested and enrolled in those courses, and we do consider those opportunities.
I can see you've been racking your brain like we're racking ours here at the committee table, but you do it full time. Thanks.
As you look at some of the people that have degrees and coming out of college, why would they want to become a VPSO when you seem to have more opportunities by just becoming a trooper or the police department?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's exactly the question. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, I was thinking of an issue that we needed to tackle, and that is exactly that. It's how do we make a VPSO position a position that people in this state want if they're going to enter the law enforcement career or profession for a career, or whether they're just looking at it as a job, and you know, what makes this job the one that they want over another job. And that's a significant challenge, you know, not only because of some of the barriers of the positions being in rural Alaska, but also some of the stigmas, I think, that have attached themselves probably unnecessarily, but over the years, particularly in the years that I think the program was under-supported. I think that's turning around. I think there's a number of things that we're doing. You know, even the highlighting of VPSOs on the Alaska State Trooper Show, for example, there's most of the programming shows VPSOs, and there's people from outside the state that know more about the VPSO program than some people in the state. Another thing that we're looking at, Captain Arlo would be going to this in a couple of minutes anyway, and that is looking at the training components of it and seeing and trying to ensure that the training that a VPSO gets is valuable training and at some point will equate in the future to a certificate of some sort from the APSC, the Alaska Police Standards Council.
Sure, Senator French has a question.
And I know I've asked this question in the past, but I have to ask it again. How many folks transition successfully from the VPSO program into a trooper position?
Yes. I believe that was one of the questions that we still owe. Actually, we owe that. I know the committee several responses back from the overview.
It's still in the works? Okay.
Yes.
And I know you're not the, if I could just follow up, I know you're not the first commissioner to think about this or how to make the VPSO a career path rather than a career sort of destination. And, you know, we look forward to your thoughts on that. I know former commissioners have thought about that. You know, what is there room for a position in between the two, or is that just needlessly complicating, you know, your job and the jobs of the communities? It just seems like that's a natural progression that should be at least some more ambitious young Alaskans.
Now, through the chair, Senator French, one of the things that we're doing right now is, if you recall, last year we were given an increment to integrate VPO and VPSO training. And part of that integration process, we looked at the VPSO training curriculum and how it's delivered. We did it primarily to see how we can get VPOs into that VPSO training, but also at the same time, we looked at the curriculum in a way that we could build on basic components to reach a level that would allow a VPSO to get a training certificate that would meet APSC minimum standards towards a basic police officer certificate. We still have some work to do on the bridge of how does a VPSO, who is not an employee of a government entity, get a police certificate. But the training itself is the first component piece. And there's three main component pieces. One is the basic police academy training, which we are in the process of fixing that piece. The second is having a field training and evaluation component or process. And then the third, primarily now, is that the person has to be an employee of a full-time employee of a government entity as a police officer, which is the piece that we've got to figure out the bridge that would allow the two to get closer together.
Follow-up, Senator Frank. Continue, Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To continue on some other recruitment efforts or opportunities, each one of the individual contractors or nonprofits have their own website, and they provide job postings on their website for opportunities in VPSO positions that are open. We have an interesting relationship that we've developed with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and just basically trying to learn some of the techniques of training and recruitment they've been using. Both the commissioner, myself, and the colonel, director of AST, have visited their facilities, and they have reciprocated as well. What we've come to find out is we're looking in mirrors. In a lot of cases, the same issues that we have in Alaska are much like the same issues in the reservations down in Low 48 with an Alaskan twist to it. But we're hoping that that'll bear some fruit in the future, just learning from each other's programs. The other thing that we realize that is very relevant is when we're doing recruiting, that the best recruiting is done by troopers and VPSOs within the ranks to go out into the field and vet people that we think are going to be the future of our agency and our profession. Anytime my command staff and my troopers that work directly for the program have an opportunity to get on the radio or any kind of presentation, we take those opportunities. One of the things we have learned is that in rural Alaska, the radio is still a very key element in the communicating. And when you get on the radio in Bethel or Kotzebue or Nome, people are out there listening. And so that's a good avenue for us. The next slide talks a little bit about, as the commissioner was stating earlier, status quo isn't acceptable. We're looking outside the box for new innovative ways. And what we did was in 2012, we hired the Juneau-based group called McDowell Group, and they did an independent evaluation of the VPSO program. They talked to members within Department of Public Safety, VPSOs themselves, troopers, community leaders, and members of the community that interact with VPSOs. And what the study over the course of about a year, they've been working this, they've come to find out that the VPSO program is very unique, very worthwhile, in an area that's very challenging to produce or provide a law enforcement or public safety type product. And they think it's money well spent, and they encouraged us to continue on, find some particular areas that they thought were needed some, I guess, attention would be strengthening the management tool within the program, i.e. contracts and how VPSOs do the job. Because it is a unique relationship, because they're not our employees, they're doing a law enforcement function, yet their employer is a nonprofit. So there's unique challenges to some of that, but we've managed over 30 years to work those things out. Recruitment, the study showed that recruitment obviously is a big issue for us, and some of the things we talked about in the study was some new innovative ideas to talk about attracting applicants to the program, one of them being this roving position in a hub. For example, a place like Kotzebue, Bethel, Nome, we would hire a VPSO in those areas where there's infrastructure, there's a place for somebody to be able to buy a home, raise a family, and then they would rove out to those smaller communities and you know, spend a couple of nights out in the villages and do public safety and law enforcement duties and then return back. We think that might be more attractive to some people. And quite frankly, it's very difficult in the smaller communities to find homes. Even though a community might want to have a VPSO, there might literally not be a home available for that VPSO unless he or she is from the village. So that would maybe help us with that problem. The other approach would be a two-week on, two-week off concept, much like in the North Slope does, and now DPS is doing that in Selawik and Emonic. We're exploring that in the VPSO program. We feel that'll attract possibly some other applicants, such as maybe retired law enforcement that are looking for another career, and with those highly skilled training that they have, bringing that into the program would be a big benefit to the program. And they could place themselves or their family anywhere in urban Alaska and just commute out for 2 weeks and live out into the villages. Things like part-time seasonal type officers in areas such as a Bristol Bay, for example, would be a region that gets a large influx of population during a specific season, increase a unit of the VPSO program during that time. or job sharing to where a person might not be interested in taking a full-time job but would want a split job with somebody else, and we would fund that opportunity if it arose. And the outside box thinking regarding the looking to the future, long-term investments with our youth, getting these camps and getting these camps on board around the state, and investing in the kids and showing them the opportunities in law enforcement. Some of the themes we have in these camps, not only introducing public safety and careers, but also there's a theme of making good life choices throughout the whole week. We bring in speakers, local speakers, that share stories, personal stories, and we just expose the kids to those kind of good messages throughout the week so they understand the value of good choices.
And Mr. Chairman, if I would also point out that the work that Captain Arlo has been talking about with the McDowell Group was part of one of the recommendations out of the Senate, the VPSO Task Force, regarding the strategic planning piece. And we anticipate that the work that some of the, which is talked about here, would be available in a report form format fairly soon. We're going through some of the final draft pieces with the McDowell Group now.
The other slide talks about the VPSO funding flexibility. As you know, this program, there's a lot of moving parts to having a public safety entity with 90 or 100 folks involved. It's not just about salaries and uniforms. There's a whole other component that we have to consider when implementing this program. And first of all, we struggle at times with some of the communities. Even though they want a VPSO, they don't have the infrastructure to support it. And so we need some flexibility to help them there. We oftentimes will direct them to opportunities within other grant opportunities with the federal government or even Alaska regarding CTAS grants, coordinated tribal assistance solicitations, rather. And we had a couple of success stories where two of our nonprofits received considerable money, and that was used for supporting, for example, in Southeast Alaska, they were awarded enough money to buy a brand new SUV for every VPSO in the region. Bristol Bay, BB&A received the same the year before, SUVs for every VPSO in the region. So that takes the burden off of us and the state and provides a really nice complement of equipment.
Captain Arlo, we have a question from Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. When you talk about infrastructure, a portion of that sometimes has been housing, and then I'd like to comment on that. And then several years ago, you know, I asked the question, is there any way to integrate those needs with the National Guard armories and stuff around? And Commissioner Pierre says that some of that has happened. And then I also made the logical but probably impractical suggestion that folks or officers both be in the Guard and the VPSO program with obvious things, including the perhaps career advancement. Anyways, can you summarize a little bit for me on that progress?
I'm through the chair. I'll tackle this one, sir. We'll talk about the National Guard Armories first. There, we are struggling a little bit on the National Guard Armory side in the sense that their state facilities, and although they're underutilized, we're working with National Guard on trying to utilize some of those as public safety facilities, and we have done that particularly in, for example, Ammonick and Selawik, where we have state troopers where we open up our post, and we utilize that facility for that trooper post. It's entirely within the state control and not the control of a nonprofit. There's a little bit of sensitivity to being able to utilize a state facility, certainly a guard facility, and hand control of that facility over to a nonprofit or the community. So there's a little bit of sensitivity there we have to work out with DMVA. But We have utilized them for the new trooper post that we put in, the locations I'd mentioned. Also for the Hooper Bay post, that's in the governor's budget request, and we're working a similar agreement with DMVA to utilize the facilities in Hooper Bay for that as well, if it's approved.
And the housing?
Okay, there are a number of different things happening with housing right now. There is a continued governor's budget request in AHFC, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, for dedicated public safety housing for the VPSO program. That's been in the governor's request and appropriated by the legislature in several previous years, and that has been successful. They're only building a small number of housing units per year. The lag time on it is pretty significant as well, but that is progressing. I know that some of the nonprofit corporations through their housing entities are looking for other alternatives as well through other grant funding programs and I imagine CIP requests and the nature. One, although this is not housing, AVCP received a CIP increment last year for this current fiscal year to build three office units, brand new construction. They were able to build those three with the funding that they received. And forgive me for the amount, I'm not sure exactly, but I think it was 1.2 or 1.3 million. They built three office units in villages with that funding. They had remaining residual funding left, and they're so getting ready
to
do
more. You're
telling
me more than I want to know or need to know. Yeah. I appreciate it. I think I speak for my colleagues if we need to encourage DMVA to be more cooperative. I think we'd be glad to do that.
Okay. I'm through the chair. I don't think they need to be kicked in the rear by this committee. The DMVA, I believe, our relationship with DMVA has probably been better than it has ever has. They're extremely, extremely cooperative.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Senator Coghill has a question.
So I heard on the granting potential for maybe getting the SUV. I think in some of the village corporations or the regional corporations have had access to some of our surplus vehicles. Has there been some talk about economies of scale on bidding that they might get some kind of a bid, skin in the game for getting a vehicle? It's always kind of rough to get hand-me-downs because then the cost of that hand-me-down sometimes is very high. So has there been any conversation about sharing in, say, bidding capacity for these, whether from a four-wheeler to a vehicle that could be used out in the villages?
I'm through the chair. I may have.
Before you answer that question, can I just read a letter that was given to me and addresses one of some of the same issues there? It actually reads, and I'll quote, "One issue that I have been hoping you could bring to is the attention is to the statewide concern. I have been told by DPS that our VPSOs can only get hand-me-down vehicles through the DOT after the troopers and other organizations have deemed them ready for replacement. This has meant that vehicles past their useful lifespan are sent to villages to die and rust out. Please, is it possible to get newer vehicles to these VPSOs?"
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to answer probably both of your questions. Traditionally, we hadn't provided a vehicle in the sense of a four-wheel drive pickup truck or Expedition or Explorer or those types of vehicles to VPSOs in the VPSO program as newly acquired. We have a mechanism by which we can surplus vehicles to nonprofits and to VPSO communities. We have taken advantage of that process in years past. Until recently, more recently, the last several years, we hadn't had VPSOs in villages that were on the road system. We do now, so we are looking at the new vehicle aspect of this. We haven't got a solution yet for that. Regarding the question of whether or not a nonprofit could take advantage of the state procurement parts, I don't know yet. We'd have to get back to you on that, unless you know.
Follow-up, Senator Coghill.
No, I'm just looking for ways that they can get them. I know in my hometown, Nenana, they have a vehicle there, and it's, I think, third-generation hand-down. But it still works serviceable, but I also know that it has its days. And so I was just wondering if there's any way we could combine efforts to get economies of scale that would benefit the VPSOs. And that would be certainly true on four-wheelers in places where, you know, boardwalks are the highways. So I was just wondering if there's any way we could do it. And if there are legal barriers, if there's something that we can do to help that.
Through the chair, I don't know that there's necessarily legal barriers on providing that type of equipment. I can tell you this. One of the things that we've testified in the past to is that with residual funding from the VPSO program that is expected to not be spent, we are reinvesting that into the VPSO program, and I, we've testified a number of times on that. We're pulling together a list, and we have been over the last several years, and updating that list of needs, infrastructure needs, and the some of the nonprofits have expressed infrastructure needs for vehicles. And we do have a list now that does have several of new vehicle requests on it, and those are being evaluated for this year.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coghill.
Much like we do with, you know, our fire departments, we depend heavily upon volunteers, just like we're going to depend heavily upon, you know, smaller communities to take the lead. But I think the legislature has been pretty willing to equip people if they're willing to do the work. And so I think, from my perspective anyway, I'm willing to look at it from that perspective. So.
I'm assuming, Commissioner, that I would also carry on over to some of the off-road areas where you have ATVs, four-wheelers, and snow machines as well.
Yes, yes, Mr. Chairman. In those areas, we are predominantly buying new equipment.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead and continue.
Just another example with regards to used equipment. The city of Sitka gave one of their apparatus fire trucks. It was a very, very expensive fire truck for $1 to the VPSO program to St. George Island. And now the task was just getting it there. So we've been working logistics to get it to there. And I think we can do that for a fairly reasonable price for the value of what that piece of apparatus will do. So there's still value to finding surplus things. But certainly the vehicle thing is another issue. With regarding to the program itself, we have some of the nonprofits are looking at innovative ways to bring some type of office structure to the ruralest parts of our state. It's very expensive, as you can imagine, to build something. So these caribou huts that SBS is offering for a fairly reasonable price, we've had a couple of those shipped out. For a pretty reasonable price, and then the community or somebody would be involved with building those, and then we would provide some type of generator and heat source, and for a nominal fee for a rural office, we can get there fairly reasonably. So TCC is working on that, as well as holding cells. That's another big issue. Infrastructure issues in villages are getting decent, safe holding cells, not only for the VPSO, but for those being incarcerated. They need a safe place to be incarcerated until we get there. With this roving position that we're implementing, there'll be a need for, during the summertime, obviously a boat for a VPSO to go from his hub rule post to the outlying villages. So those will be added new things that we'll be introducing into the program that we maybe not have done before. And there's always the ability to restore current offices and, in some cases, homes within the VPSO program. We'll get requests every year at this time of the year saying, hey, I need $15,000-$20,000 to refurbish a particular, you know, plumbing or electrical issue. So we try to be flexible with our funding on those issues. Some other areas that we're looking at is this program is growing with the numbers that we have, providing a constant opportunity for learning. What we're looking at is distance learning opportunities through the internet, and we're developing courses that can be viewed on the internet, and that way we can provide more opportunities for our VPSOs to learn a particular, whatever the topic is. So those are another avenues of flexibility we need. And we have developed a field training program, much like the Alaska State Troopers have, where we have trained our VPSOs up under a national standard as an FTO, and they go through that training just like any law enforcement entity would. And then they provide a training component for those VPSOs coming out of our academy's environment. So that kind of validates that our training is working and they can do the job. That comes with considerable cost as well, because in our hubs and the trooper world, our training sites are Fairbanks, Soldotna, and Palmer. In rural Alaska, they're all over the place, and it's a little more difficult with providing transportation and per diem and those things. So we're hoping that these innovative ideas will create better pools for our program.
Mr. Chairman, Jeff Hoover for the department. This slide just a quick representation of the 14 VPSO budget. It's a pretty leanly managed budget. There's personal services of that includes the five positions. Some of the funding that's in services, capital outlay, and commodities is directly going to the grantee. It's just handled by the state. So that's what this slide is showing. Next. Our FY14 budget request, it continues the initiative for the 15 positions, $2.679 million. It does include one-time training and equipment cost of $409 that will be backed out. Within the budget, you'll see where the VPSO support and the VPSO contracts components were merged, and that is to make it the program more efficient. We want to be able to streamline the budget and administrative process so we can get as much funding out to the grantees as needed.
And Mr. Chairman, this slide here is a visual depiction pretty much of where we have been with the number of VPSO positions, where we have gotten to. Currently, 92 positions is where we're at. We had a very successful, probably a four-year stretch of filling positions. We kind of leveled off a little bit. Also, you know, one of the questions I know you have, because certainly I would have that, it is, if you're at 92 positions now and you should be around 116, 115, what's the prospect of getting those filled as you go into the next fiscal year where you're wanting to get even 15 more than that? I can tell you that, you know, certainly the hiring cycles go up and down, up and down, up and down, and what we've been able to do is kind of gradually keep increasing that over the years. We're at a down point in our cycle now, a little bit further down than we wanted to be. Our troopers do the background investigations for the nonprofits for these VPSO positions. I know that we have currently 10 that have been approved for hire as of today. I know that is a potential there, so nonprofits could move forward with those 10 as soon as they're ready to do so. And then we have another 11 on top of that we're in the process of completing background investigations on as well. So on the optimistic side, we certainly have the capacity to probably fairly soon fill 15 to, well, on the most optimistic side, 21 positions. It is going to take an effort, not only involving some of the programmatic changes that we want to implement and do within the program, and the support components that we want to get out into the communities to ready them for a VPSO position, but it's also going to take commitment and effort not only on the troopers but also on the communities and on the nonprofits to recruit and get these positions filled, and then also concentrate on the retention piece, on keeping people in the positions that we do hire for.
Well, I certainly commend you on doubling the number of troopers that you had out there over a very short period of time, so there's a fair amount of effort. What do you see that we can improve it so that you could continue to increase the number of recruitment and as well as retention of those people?
Mr. Chairman, I think that, you know, it comes right back to that that piece that we asked earlier, and that is why would I want to be a VPSO and why would I want to stay in that position? So the more that we can answer some of those questions to the positive of why somebody would be wanting that position, mm-hmm. Certainly some of it's pay, certainly some of it is training. I think some of it has got to be, is my training and time spent in this position going to benefit me later on? Maybe it's in the same community, or maybe it's in a different community or in a different position. I think that is going to be a piece of it. And I think the slow and gradual change that we have on the perception of a VPSO in a community has got to keep continuing to escalate the way it has been the last 3-4 years. So it's going to be a slow process of getting to where we want to go, not an insurmountable one, but certainly one where we have to assess every day what we're doing, how we're doing it, what can we do better, and get out of the box that we have kept ourselves in, I would say pre-4 years ago, but that we continually fight that today as far as what a VPSO is, what they should be doing, how they should be doing it, and how they relate in the overall village and law enforcement profession.
Senator Coghill.
Probably a question I'm not too sure the answer of. The corporations, the nonprofits that you work with, certainly get to do a lot of the management. What are some of the frustrations that they feel of implementation that that we don't ever really get to hear of?
I know that Captain Arlo gets these probably every phone calls every day, so I'm going to let him answer.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, some of the frustrations contractually of the way it's represented is that the nonprofits are the support element of this relationship, and we would take on the law enforcement as a consultant type. So anytime we do movement of VPSOs around for whatever reason, strategic reasons, communities asking for it, we sometimes communicating that to the nonprofit in a timely manner in our world, when law enforcement is a reactive mode, sometimes we don't necessarily give that information to them in a timely manner, and vice versa. Sometimes they're moving VPSOs around within a region and aren't telling DPS that we're getting ready to move VPSOs, and for maybe there's a potlatch going on or some funeral, and they want to show some additional public safety presence. And it's important that both sides are communicating frequently and timely, and those are some of the struggles we have. I think one of the biggest struggles is finding those communities that have VPSOs to understand the importance of supporting VPSOs, and those nonprofits are a key component in getting that message out to their communities. We can spread that message, but the message I think is heard better when it's coming from a regional nonprofit and the leadership in that region.
Follow-up, Senator Cogan?
No, I'm just wanted to hear it from them before I heard it from the corporations.
One of the questions I've had, you know, the Alaska State Trooper TV program has been very popular. It's rerunning and running again, and certainly there's been a lot of interest because of that. What are the thoughts on trying to increase the exposure of the VPSOs on those programs? And I realize it's probably not your production budget to go into there, but what are the thoughts if you were able to do that, that you'd have more applicants that were interested in becoming VPSOs as well?
Mr. Chairman, I had this exact conversation with the Nat Geo team yesterday.
Oh, really?
PSG Films, who's the filming company, their owner was up in Anchorage yesterday, as well as the executive producer for Nat Geo was up yesterday. So we met in my office in Anchorage, and we talked specifically about them concentrating on and having more in-depth coverage in rural areas of Alaska, and specifically about talking more in-depth and visually showing more in-depth what the VPSOs do.
Well, that's very timely. Any further questions of the commissioner? If not, I want to thank you very much for coming out, Captain Arlo, Mr. Hoover, coming out this afternoon, and we'll continue on. Our next meeting is going to be on Tuesday, February 19th, from 3:30 to 4:30 here in the Senate Finance Room, and we'll be going over the trooper aircraft and budget amendments. With that, if there's no further questions, we're adjourned.